following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Episode number 99 of Inside Eagle Nation. Next week, we hit the century mark of Inside Eagle Nation. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed. 99 in, one to go until 100, and hopefully a lot more after that.
I think I find a way to say every few months that it's amazing we get to whatever number it is, thinking back to a couple of years ago when it started, but we'll save the mushy stuff for number 100 next week.
Yeah. You use that every couple of weeks, and every couple of weeks you're right.
But, I mean, 100 is going to be great. We'll get a chance to look even more deeply into the history of Georgia Southern football. But at least this week we don't have to talk about anything getting canceled or postponed per se. This was a Saturday that was already scheduled to be off. But instead of us talking about the game that was supposed to be played tomorrow against App State, we've got an opponent, another opponent, and it's here. We get to welcome back an old friend in the UMass Minutemen.
Yeah, it's technically it's a postponement, but look at it more as a substitution.
Yeah.
But before we dive too deep into that, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. Before we dive into the what we're going to call a substitution for Georgia Southern football, look around other action in Georgia Southern athletics. Georgia Southern men's golf was supposed to be in Morgantown, West Virginia for a tournament the first of next week, but because that was canceled, Georgia Southern decides why not bring the majority of that field that's supposed to play in West Virginia, bring them to Statesboro. They're going to do just that for the Bash in the Borough at the Georgia Southern Golf Course next Monday and Tuesday, the 19th and the 20th, for what is scheduled to be the final fall tournament of the season. You can also catch up with head coach Carter Collins in this week's Coach's Corner on Blue White Weekly that'll air on Saturday, 11:30 on WJCL down in Savannah. You can also find it on YouTube as well as gseagles.com after it airs on WJCL. Georgia Southern Women's Golf opens up the fall schedule this coming Sunday through Tuesday up in Pine Mountain, Georgia at the Callaway Gardens. Georgia Southern Rifle, now this is a little bit of a different one. You heard Coach Sandra Warman talking about this a little bit in the Tuesday talks with Jared a couple of weeks ago, but they host VMI technically in what is called a postal match. Now VMI will not be making the trip to Statesboro. VMI will shoot at their facility. Georgia Southern will shoot at theirs, combine the results, figure out who won, and that is what you call a postal match.
Do they do this over Zoom?
That I don't believe. I don't think so.
That'd be funny to play a basketball game over Zoom or a baseball game. Okay, you pitch, we'll swing, or we'll play a basketball game. Okay, we're running, man. That'd be fun.
It would be. It's almost like you used to have those baseball games that you play with like a card. Somebody lays down a single, somebody else lays down an out.
Stratomatic.
Yeah, there you go. Forgot what it was called. But it'll be the postal match for Georgia Southern and VMI coming up this weekend. Georgia Southern men's soccer fell to Central Arkansas in Statesboro on Saturday, a final score of 4-1 for the Bears. They got the Schedule shifted a little bit for Georgia Southern men's soccer this weekend. We're supposed to host Georgia State on Saturday, but because of UMass now being scheduled for Saturday at Allen E. Paulson, Georgia Southern men's soccer pulling their game back to a Friday night kick, 7 p.m. over at Eagle Field against the Georgia State Panthers. Also finding out on Monday that the match against UAB next Tuesday has been canceled. It's supposed to be in Birmingham next Tuesday evening, but again, that one has been canceled against Georgia Southern and UAB. Georgia Southern women's soccer falling to Coastal Carolina on Thursday evening, 3-0 in Statesboro, but bounced back as they headed up the mountain to Boone with a 1-0 victory over the App State Mountaineers on the road on Sunday afternoon as Marcella Montoya knocks the back of the net for Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern women's soccer will now head to Charleston on Friday as they take on the Citadel, a 4 p.m. kick, and then host Georgia State on Sunday at 7 p.m. at Eagle Field. So a full slate of soccer this weekend in Statesboro. You get Georgia Southern, Georgia State men's soccer Friday, coming to the football game Saturday, and then on Sunday, Georgia Southern, Georgia State on women's soccer.
Personal note, I saw my first Georgia Southern soccer match since I arrived here. I was at the Coastal Carolina women's match last week.
That's right. I saw you from across the way.
And it was, I'd been to soccer matches before. I'd never been to a Division I college soccer match. But the speed of the game was definitely noticeable. I thought Maddie Clintworth played really well. But as much as Georgia Southern, I think, outplayed Coastal Carolina outside of the first 5 minutes of the first half, Coastal's two goals in the very beginning of the second half, they seemed to be too much to overcome.
So, again, two games this weekend for Georgia Southern. Friday, they head to Charleston, and then on Sunday, we'll host Georgia State at 7 o'clock over at Eagle Field. Georgia Southern cross country were supposed to have a meet in Buford on Saturday, but because of a cancellation, they will now head to Conway, South Carolina, and run against Coastal Carolina on Friday afternoon. Georgia Southern volleyball, we talked about it a little bit last week, still in the middle of the two-week postponement because of contact tracing concerns. They will return to action next Friday, the 23rd, as they hit the road down to Mobile against South Alabama. A couple of football notes to get to coming out earlier on this week. Coastal Carolina kickoff has been announced as a 12 noon kick from Conway. That one will be on ESPNU, another nationally televised game for Georgia Southern in 2020. And then you get into what happened last week. What's the old song? Oh, what a difference 24 little hours can make. That's about what it was. As Wednesday, you find out that Georgia Southern and Appalachian State, a nationally televised game supposed to be tomorrow, if you're listening this time on Tuesday, supposed to be on Wednesday, that one gets canceled. We've talked a lot about how Appalachian has struggled with a lot of COVID concerns, still not practicing as of last night, hopefully getting back to the practice fields later on this week. Then Thursday, you turn around, you're thinking you may be off for right around 3 weeks, and then, pulling another rabbit out of the hat, you've got UMass now coming in to Allen E. Paulson Stadium this weekend.
I'm glad that Jared Bentko does not have a touch-tone cell phone, because if he did, the numbers would have been worn off a long time ago. But give him a lot of credit. Give a lot of credit to UMass's athletic director, Ryan Bamford, for being so accessible. Remember, they had called off their season as an independent. They had lost a lot of their schedule, very similar to how Army had. Army was able to make it work. But I think once, like a lot of other teams saw that they could do it, UMass decided that they needed to at least make an effort to do it. The plan was for them to play around six games. They may only get to do three or four. In fact, if you go to their website, on their schedule, Georgia Southern is the only game that is listed, which could be something to laugh about 30 years from now. This was about the time that they wanted to play, and they did have a game in the hopper. It looked like they were trying to play Florida Atlantic on the 17th, because, as we know, FAU had their bye week in advance of the Marshall game. But luckily enough for Georgia Southern, they could play that game. It looks like it's going to be sometime in November, and UMass can come to Paulson for the second time in 3 years, and maybe the result will be the same.
I was joking with Jared last week as we were shooting Blue White Weekly that at some point, and it may be a couple of years down the road, but there needs to be a 30 for 30 on Jared's first year. He finally gets his dream job as a athletic director at a Division I institution.
In his home state.
In his home state. There were so many things that when he took the job, were going for it. And it's amazing how optimistic, upbeat he still is, because I guarantee you, if it was a lot of other people, it wouldn't be quite as upbeat. You get your first AD job, and then you're faced with COVID concerns, so many scheduling headaches. But I don't know that there was anybody better to take over this program, not just from his knowledge, but his outlook and perspective on things.
Being at four different SEC schools over more than a decade, it definitely helps that confidence and seeing how things work at that level, and to have an understanding of college athletics in this state. Remember, one of those schools was Georgia. He worked under the great Claude Felton in the Sports Info office, graduated from Georgia. I believe he worked as a softball staff assistant for the Sports Information Department. So he gets how college athletics goes, especially in this state. He's realized the cachet that the Georgia Southern name carries. And, of course, a lot of that pertains to football. But it's the brand that Georgia Southern now has nationally, and a lot of that has been cultivated by playing a GoDaddy Bowl in front of millions of people back in 2015, playing a Camellia Bowl in 2018, playing a Cure Bowl in 2019, and the success of various other sports, how baseball has gone to the College World Series, how Rodney Hennen has taken the Eagles to six regionals over the course of 21 years, how the basketball team has gotten some national exposure, more so lately with Brian Berg taking over. We'll get to him more in a little bit because practice is coming up. First day in practice tomorrow. But it's simply hearing Georgia Southern and what that name represents, not just on the gridiron, but the kind of department that exists here in Statesboro and the people that exist in it. And that's something that has been cultivated really going back to ever since the school was constructed about 100 years ago. Now, granted, athletics didn't get thrust into the forefront until you could accurately say Irk Russell. I mean, baseball had won a NAI national championship in 62. J.I. Clemens did unreal things with that program, and basketball had a lot of success under J.B. Scarse. But from a national standpoint, it was football that got Georgia Southern under that microscope. And the rest of the programs have a chance to reap those benefits. And when Jared can reach out and say, I'm the director of athletics at Georgia Southern, yes, UMass, in this case, needed a game to get their season going, just to say, hey, we are playing in 2020. But the fact that it's against Georgia Southern, the fact that they can feature their program on national television, they're going to get a chance to play on ESPNU. And they've fallen on hard times a little bit since making the move up to the FBS, which I think we covered 2 years ago, the last time that the Eagles played the Minutemen. But the way you help yourself is by putting yourself out there. And in that standpoint, it doesn't really matter what the product is, because if people can't see it, then they can't even consider it.
Yeah, it's a great way to look at it.
Look, they were 1-11 last year, but if you don't play on national television, you kind of get lost. And that's why they decided to play this year. They've done everything they could from a health standpoint. They've only had three positive tests in nearly 2,500 total tests from the athletic department since they got back in late June. They've got some of the strictest protocols. This is their reward for all the work that they've put in. And another reward is the fact that, hey, UMass can say, yeah, I'm playing Georgia Southern, but I'm going to get a chance to do it on national television, and I don't want to be 1-11 anymore. This may be their only game this year. And they might get to play FAU. They may be able to scratch out a couple of other games. But knowing that that cachet that Georgia Southern carries, that's a big deal for people. And it's even more so now that Georgia Southern is such a big player in the FBS.
We're going to dive into the Minutemen a little bit later on in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But a couple of practices starting to get going. Georgia Southern hoops going to get going, as you mentioned. Going to be getting things rolling on the hardwood in the next couple of days for both men's and women's basketball. Georgia Southern baseball starting fall practices in the last couple of weeks, had a couple of scrimmages this weekend, and I think the Deagles fared pretty well, according to Aaron Soka.
Did the ball that Corey Dowdell hit land?
All I heard from Aaron was that if there weren't trees between baseball and softball, it would have landed on the softball field. And we say that a lot, but Aaron is dead set that it would have landed on the softball field.
Corey Dowdell is the freshman slugger out of Camden County. Once you get a chance to see him, if you haven't already, you almost feel bad if you're a pitcher that they let him take a bat to the plate.
I don't necessarily feel that bad for the pitcher. I feel bad for the ball. Apparently, the ball that he hit that would have landed on the softball field, Jason Richmond went and retrieved, which, because of course Rich did. And apparently, where he hit it, the seams were no longer raised. And obviously, with a in a college baseball, the ball doesn't necessarily have – everybody sees the high school baseballs where the seams are about a mile high, and I could throw a nasty curveball. But college are – they're a little bit raised, but not to that extent.
Yeah.
But I think they were smaller than Major League Baseball seams when after Corey Dowdell got done with it.
That's good stuff.
But going to be excited to talk Georgia Southern hoops over the next couple of weeks and figure out what Brian Berg is going to bring to Statesboro. We already know it's a lot of new faces, but see what those faces can do. And from early indications of some of the preseason workouts, it's going to be something pretty special.
They're going to play defense because he comes from a defensive tree with Robbie Lang, Ed Campbell, former Georgia Southern assistant twice over under Frank Kearns, Lavelle Moten, most recently Chris Beard at both Little Rock and Texas Tech, taking a school that had no business being a basketball power and taking them not only to an Elite Eight, but then 1 year later going to a national championship game against Virginia only to fall in overtime. And you've got to think that's the last memory that people have of the NCAA tourney because it didn't get played last year. So the last time that Brian Berg coached an actual game in an NCAA tournament setting was a national championship. Now, Texas Tech was just fine last year. They had one of the best freshmen in the country in Jamias Ramsey. They didn't quite have the year they did the 2 years before, but they had lost a bunch off of that with guys like Jared Culver going on to the NBA. But I think the way that he is going to develop the talent that he has recruited and what is already here, it has a chance to be something that Eagle basketball fans haven't seen before.
Going to get going over the next couple of weeks, and we will have all the updates you could ever want for Georgia Southern hoops, both on the men's and women's side, as they get closer and closer to tip-off of the 2020 season.
Now, we don't have those schedules yet because with the NCAA announcing that the season's going to bump back until the 25th of November and the Sun Belt says, okay, you've got 5 weeks from then until December the 30th to play whatever non-conference you're going to get, and then league play starts on New Year's Eve. Now, the hope is that within the next few weeks that Georgia Southern will be able to firm up some semblance of a non-conference schedule. And even for Georgia Southern women, it's the same kind of boat. And I think that we've gotten accustomed to these late schedules the last few years because nobody wants to play Georgia Southern. And a lot of that has to do with the level of recruiting that has taken place here. And I anticipate that to only get better as long as this regime is here.
Georgia Southern and UMass will get it going on the football field this weekend. We'll dive more into the Minutemen in our final segment of this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But for now, we pause for some Eagle Tales with Roger Inman.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
All right, Roger, we just found this out recently. We need you to confirm it. Is it true that at one point you were pre-med?
When I came here at Georgia Southern in 77, my intent was to become a physical therapist, go through the part of the pre-med here, do all the biology work, and become a physical therapist and get rich. And thank goodness we started football, because instead of being wealthier and possibly miserably, I live happily ever after. I've enjoyed my 40-plus years here, and God, hope that I have 5 or 6, 7 more, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, as long as the body still goes. I want to be like the Ever Ready Bunny. I want to go every day and just keep ticking like the Timex.
Wow. Thanks a lot, Roger. Now let's go to Colin Lacey with this week's Beyond the Bio.
Time now for Beyond the Bio with Colin Lacey.
So we continue this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, your official podcast for Georgia Southern Athletics. We step into Beyond the Bio, and this week we step into the Multimedia Development Center with Colin Cruz, broadcast engineer and producer for the MDC. Colin, appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, Colin, thanks for having me.
Take us back kind of into your story. When did you realize that broadcast and kind of the media side was something you wanted to do?
I would say in college is when I made the decision about going the path I did with live TV and broadcasting. But before that, you know, I grew up playing soccer, played football in high school. So always been around sports, wanted to do something with sports. Originally, I was going to go down the track of being a physical therapist. I think like many college kids, first year in, you're like, all right, maybe this is not the path I want to take. And from there, I got into advertising and then found a way in with the athletic department at ETSU to get involved and do what I do. You know, it's a smaller school, so you don't have a lot of staff on hand. So it really allowed me to not just focus on one thing, more well-rounded, I guess, my education as a job. So I was at provided a lot of opportunities to learn quick, which was nice. Learn how to fix things in the industry and what the do's and don'ts were. That has opened up countless doors, which ultimately led to coming to Georgia Southern and being able to work with the great team we have at the Multimedia Development Center, to work with the athletic department, you know, all the sports information guys over there, the coaches, the players. So how I kind of circled back and got to where I am today.
You mentioned a graduate from East Tennessee State. While you're there, you worked as a technical director and producer for the Buccaneer Sports Network. You talked about kind of the first hands-on experience that you would have in this industry that would open so many doors. What was it like being able to kind of be thrown into the fire, for lack of a better term, of that's what your job wanted to be, and you're getting to do it while still in school?
Yeah, being thrown in at East Tennessee State while going through college probably helped me more than anything else. I learned more stuff doing that job than I did in the courses I was taking, more so because I quickly realized that was going to be the path I wanted to go down. I wanted to be involved in sports like this, to be able to broadcast them. I still get to have relationships with coaches, with players, with administrators in the athletic department, which is full circle kind of for me, not playing, to still be around all of that. So I got to learn quick. The boss I had up there, he was a very smart guy. He needed somebody to really be interested in helping him out. So I quickly kind of jumped in there. You know, at first it was running camera or something basic, but within probably 6 months I really showed the interest of wanting to learn different positions and different ways of doing things to help bring up our broadcast and help provide me with what I needed to be prepared for the future.
Once you graduate from ETSU, then take a job at Appalachian State for a year as a digital content producer. Your first job out of school, everybody says in this industry it's the hardest one to get. What was the biggest thing that you learned from that experience up in Boone?
Things were a little different when you got to a little bigger of a football school, I think is the bigger thing. I know App State's a rival, but there's something special about being up on the mountain. It was a great place to learn. It was a storied football program to be around, which led to being around TV trucks, which led to a lot of media attention because of the level of football App was playing at the time. So being able to step into that role at that bigger of a program definitely prepared me for coming here more than going somewhere smaller or would have provided. I was given an opportunity to go to Wofford and work with them straight out of college, but you know, I kind of had to step back a second and see what's better for me long term, and App State was the move because, again, bigger football program, access to more equipment, which was nice, but also being around the other TV trucks that came in and all the brilliant people they had on staff up there to make things look good.
One of the cool things looking throughout your time as a freelancer, one of the cool things that kind of jumps off the page is you worked at Bristol Motor Speedway for all the events there for a while. Take us through what that experience was like and how that kind of came about for you.
Yeah, let me tell you, I work in NASCAR. Bristol Motor Speedway is something special in itself. That's probably a guilty pleasure of mine, is I'm a big NASCAR fan now from doing all that stuff. But we at ETSU, we built a relationship with the guys at the racetrack. We did a few small things my first year. Then they brought us in to stream some of their smaller events like Monster Trucks during the summer and Short Track Nationals and stuff like that. So when they decided to build Colossus in, they did a redo of pretty much all their video stuff. Built a whole brand new control room up in the press box area. We obviously added the world's largest hanging four-sided display. That's a big thing, especially at a racetrack. And, you know, people don't think about video boards or, you know, technological innovation at a NASCAR event. So being able to work with them, and then those small events opened doors for bigger events. I was able to work the Battle of Bristol, which was the Tennessee-Virginia Tech game. Seeing 160,000 people was something special. I really don't think a lot of people have experience with seeing that many people packed into a stadium like that. So that was a big thing for me, and definitely nailed in that this is what I wanted to do. And then that led to them bringing us in for NASCAR. They looked at us for being a supplier of camera operators, for replay operator, TD, and all that, which opened the door for not just myself, but my coworkers and my boss at that time, all being able to be hands-on with a major sport like that at one of the most historic venues you can have in auto racing. It was really beneficial for me personally and for our group at that time.
You make the move down to Georgia Southern. Here you get to do a little bit of everything, whether you're directing ESPN broadcasts, whether you're producing Blue White Weekly, working as a broadcast engineer, helping with the national broadcast when they come to Paulson. Having your hand in so many different things, how much does that help you getting to see so many different aspects of this industry?
It definitely is helpful. You know, I give props to the guys and girls who at the higher level than we're at right now, you know, they kind of sometimes do specialize in one avenue. I look at it as it's making me a more well-rounded person and worker for wherever I go in the future, whether it's staying at Georgia Southern for a while longer to really build up what we got here, or taking the step to a larger network or maybe the SEC, ACC type job. I really enjoy my job. I get to learn so much that people at my position, even across the Sun Belt, don't have the opportunity to do. I'm hands-on every broadcast we do, producing our ESPN broadcast, which is where I started, so that's what I really find the joy in, but also getting produced content's fun. And we do the weekly TV show that airs on WJCL. It can be a fun one to do sometimes, especially with how COVID it's going on right now. The challenges are where you really learn best, I think, making the changes in how we're doing things because of what's going on, finding even better ways to do things that'll help us for the future, less setup time or whatever it may be. We're in a way being more efficient, but also still dealing with the COVID side effects, you know, making sure we sanitize everything that anybody has touched. And then you have the engineering aspect of my job with a national broadcast for football. You know, those trucks come in and they don't know our facility, so it's important to be able to relay the information needed to these trucks and to the engineers on the trucks for how they need to hook up, how they're going to run cables. If a feed stops working during a game, how do we fix that? So plenty of opportunities to learn even moving forward, which is great. You know, I don't like not being able to learn something. The greatest thing is, you know, it's better to ask questions. If you don't understand how something's working, ask a question. Somebody somewhere will know and be able to help you there.
Being able to work with the MDC over the last couple of years has been a lot of fun, especially since people like you and Nelson and Bree come along. When you look at the MDC and how much it's grown over the last couple of years, what's the biggest thing that you see from this department?
The quality of work, I think, is something that we strive on. And something special about the MDC is our relying on students. Students are a center focus point for us as a unit. We have, I think, 15 students on hand that every game they're learning something new. We have some all-stars that come in and really just blow the camera work away for the broadcast. Little things that these students do that the people sitting at home don't realize or don't think about being an opportunity. And that's how we get the kids to get jobs. You know, we had one 2 years ago when she graduated, she went up to Bristol and interviewed with ESPN, and she's working the NFL shows with them now, which is something special. We've provided some other students some great opportunities out there. And even if they don't want to do this, you know, down the road, it's still a great place to learn some things. There's opportunities endless anywhere. And you know, you want to freelance and make side money, that's something that's huge in our field. Preparing them for what's going to happen once they graduate college is what's important, and something our director, Art Berger, strives on. You know, working with us working with different groups of students to really bolster our student workforce and prepare them for after college.
When you look at people, especially in this industry at this level, everybody gets to where they are because of some key people in their career and in their life. Who are some of the mentors that you look to?
Don't want to sound cliche, but you know, my mom and my dad were definitely the first ones, supported me and my decisions of what I wanted to do. And my boss at East Tennessee State was vital in where I am today. Steven was a smart man who's been around college athletics for a while. And sometimes in this career field, it's not easy to explain what you're doing or how to do it. You know, I try to ask the questions in an efficient way because, you know, we still have a job to do, but I wanted to learn, and I was provided those opportunities by him that really would have stopped me from being able to go somewhere like this if that not happened. And even now, you know, I look at Art, he's a great leader for us. He provides me opportunities to build myself, which is good. It relies on me to help keep the unit functioning, keep the broadcast good, try to raise the quality each game of what we're doing to a higher level so we can be the best in the Sun Belt.
When you've had so many experiences throughout your career, obviously there's going to be a couple that kind of stick out in your brain. What are some of your favorite experiences that you got to be a part of?
It's a good question. There's a few of big ones out there that, you know, I spoke about the Battle of Bristol. That was something special in itself. Again, 160,000 fans for a football game. I mean, it's something huge. Something special like that was definitely a key part of still wanting to do this, bolstering that dream of doing this on a daily basis. Some other big ones would be probably the SoCon basketball tournaments held in Asheville. If you've not been to Asheville, Asheville's a special place in itself, and they really do a good job with the basketball tournament. Thankfully, my senior year, we won the conference tournament, so that was something special, not just for working it, but you know, that's my home team right there, and it was special just to be, you know, happy our team won, but also what that then led to. I was able to go down to Orlando and be at the March Madness tournament with our guys. You know, we didn't win. We lost against Florida, which is very unfortunate, but it provided me and the other video people a chance that a lot of people do not get, especially at that level, being a SoCon basketball team. We're not a Power Five. We don't have 15 people on staff for the video department. We have one full-time guy and we have a bunch of students. So having the opportunity to be able to travel down to Orlando, see how they do the March Madness, be on that court where teams literally make history, was something special in itself.
Finally, before we let you go, this segment's called Beyond the Bio. Give us something that people may not know about you, something beyond your bio.
I think big thing is my love for outdoors. I'm a big wilderness guy. I like to hike. I like to explore new places. I've now made the trip out to Yellowstone twice, probably my favorite place in the country right now. Just get to see a lot of things that you don't get to see in South Georgia, where it's flat and there's just pine trees everywhere. Get to experience wildlife and really see what else is out there in this country that, you know, outside of work, you know, you got to have something to find joy in and kind of escape away to. And that's one of them. I've gotten to see quite a few national parks in the country, and making those trips and seeing new places is something fun that I really enjoy doing.
Colin, appreciate the time. Appreciate everything that you do for Georgia Southern Athletics. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, Colin.
Once again, that is Colin Cruz from the Multimedia Development Center, a broadcast engineer, a producer, and probably 17 other things that aren't necessarily in his title, but he does anyway. But a great asset to what Georgia Southern Athletics does, especially with the ESPN Plus broadcast. He is responsible for being the director for a lot of the broadcasts that you see of the Olympic sports, and a overall just great person that we get to hang out with every week when we do Blue White Weekly.
When we say things, he tells us to cut, and then we say them better.
Correct.
And thankfully, he's there, because if not, who knows what will come out of our mouths.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth?
We actually might need him here for some of these.
Very true. Very true. Georgia Southern will look ahead to the UMass Minutemen coming into Alan E. Paulson Stadium, a 4 o'clock kickoff from Paulson this weekend. It'll be a 2 o'clock airtime on the Georgia Southern Sports Network, as Frank, Terry, Russ, and myself will be on with the Eagle Tailgate Show. But you look at this UMass team, we mentioned it a little bit earlier, 1-11 a year ago. This was a team that, to be quite frank, was not very good. But you look, a lot of new faces, and second year for head coach Walt Bell, who I don't know that I've seen more of a turnover of a team in this quick of a time frame.
We're going to get close to it when we talk about Texas State later this year, because Jake Spavadal has nearly turned over half of that roster in two seasons. Bell has one-upped him, because he has overturned two-thirds of this roster in less than 2 years. They're almost entirely freshmen, redshirt freshmen, sophomores. Now, look, they have some juniors and seniors. Let's not get too crazy. But he knew when taking this job that this was going to be a multi-year rebuild. And remember, just a few weeks ago, they weren't playing this year. Yeah. They just found out 5 days ago that they were playing their first game. Oh, by the way, they got to get on a plane. Oh, by the way, they got to come down here. Oh, by the way, they got to face an option team. Now, granted, it's gun pistol. It's not like going against an Army, a Navy, or an Air Force, or what Georgia Tech used to be. But this is a tall task for a team that's going over an entire rebuild. And when he was hired by Ryan Bamford, the athletic director, he knew that. And I think part of the fact that he's the fourth youngest head coach of the country gives him a chance to say, look, I know what I'm doing as a coordinator. He's one of the best recruiters in the country. He's a talented play caller. But now that this is his team, his organization, his unit, he gets a chance to do it specifically his way.
You talk about a lot of freshmen, redshirt freshmen. The guy that they're going to be going with or expected to be going with at quarterback is technically a redshirt senior, transferred in from Sacred Heart after 2016, but has only seen one drive.
Yes.
As a UMass Minuteman.
Yeah.
That's a good question. They're the UMass Minutemen. Is one of them a Minuteman?
Yeah.
Okay.
He is the Minuteman quarterback, or he is just the Minuteman.
Okay. Anyway.
Or the quarterback for the Minuteman. That's just,
right, sure.
We're thinking too much.
Yeah, probably. This is where we need Colin Cruz. Mike Fallon, guy from up in Massachusetts, as we mentioned, a redshirt senior, but he has only taken one drive as a UMass Minuteman. There it is.
Well, you know how that happened.
It was out of necessity.
Yeah.
Because of injury, but you look at a guy that now is your guy. He's played in one game, in one drive of that one game.
They used four different quarterbacks last year. Two of them return. Fallon is one of them, despite only attempting two passes all of last year. Granted, it wasn't their only victory. They beat Akron 37-29. Outside of that, none of their other games were within three scores, and as we said, all of their games were losses outside of beating the Zips. The other quarterback that's back is Andrew Brito. Played nine games last year, started six of them, had some concussion issues towards the end of the year. He's not even listed in the two deep.
Right. And there's three quarterbacks listed in the two deep.
And one of them played tight end last year, Josiah Johnson. He might be the most physically gifted of the guys that are listed. He goes 6'5", 210.
Yeah, there's not too many times where you see on the roster QB/tight end. We thought it was kind of odd to have Anthony Beck be a punter and tight end, but
he has a good arm, though.
Yeah, he does.
I think seeing Fallon listed as the number one in from this standpoint is, okay, he's there as a placeholder, and who knows, on Saturday maybe he is the one that takes the first snap, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's 16 Josiah Johnson. I wouldn't be shocked if it's 15 Will Cook. I wouldn't be shocked if it's 12 Andrew Brito. That's just what you deal with when it's a team that just found out it's playing. And it's their first game, and there's no film to go off of. All you can do is watch 2019. So you can get a little bit on Brito. You can watch Josiah Johnson play tight end, but you're not really going to get a very good instance of what they have at quarterback. They're going to try to run the ball, primarily because they have a new running back. Ellis Merriweather is a junior college transfer out of Garden City in Kansas. Alpharetta boy, played for the Alpharetta High Raiders. Good size at 6'1", 220. They had to remake the backfield. Bilal Ali, who had spent the previous 4 years as a backup slash the number one guy a year ago, ran for 850 and seven touchdowns, but after last season, transfer portal, so he's not back. Cam Roberson is somebody that moved from wide receiver to running back a year ago to give them more depth, but now he is expected to be more of a wide receiver in 2020. I would expect Merriweather to get a lot of the carries.
You talk about kind of remaking the backfield. As far as other weapons on the offense goes, the biggest thing that you see is the only real place that UMass has experience is in that wide receiving core, and it's just a couple of guys. You look at MLS, you look at Johnson, and outside of that, that's the most experience you have on this team.
From the game 2 years ago, I remember guys like Sadiq Palmer, Brennan Dingle, Jesse Britt. None of them are back, and you can't forget about Andy Isabella, who that 2018 season, he led the country in receiving. He had nearly 1,700 yards. Now, in the game in Statesboro, he had nine catches, but remember, the power of Paulson got to him that night. He had three false starts. I don't ever remember a game, and I may never see it again, where a wide receiver had three false starts.
Yeah.
Now he's playing for the Arizona Cardinals. He was a second-round pick 2 years ago. O.C. Johnson is their fastest guy. Now, he goes by O.C. His given name is Jermaine. This is great. I was talking to my good buddy Jay Burnham, who's the voice of the Minutemen. O.C. was the nickname that was given to him a number of years ago by his father. O.C. stands for out of control. I think that's awesome. That might be that's one of the best nicknames I've ever heard.
That's amazing.
He's their biggest downfield threat. Emelis is the way that Jay described him to me, the one-on-one guy. They may try to get him down the sidelines, and with the inexperience that Georgia Southern has in the secondary, it could be time for Emelis to show out. Outside of that, though, they like Victor Santiago. They like Melvin Hill. There just isn't a whole lot of film and a whole lot of experience to go off of, a lot like what we've talked about with the Eagle secondary.
Now, you flip it over to the defensive side for UMass, and this is where they, let's just say, struggled last year, giving up almost 53 points a game, giving up 560-plus yards per game. But on the flip side of that, a lot of the guys that were on the defense that gave that up are no longer on this two deep anymore. There are a couple of guys that were relatively key contributors to this defense. You look at a guy like Jake Bisco that's coming back from an injury in the nose tackle spot, may or may not be back for this ball game. But for the most part, it's a lot of new guys.
Billy Wooden was a freshman that played up front last year out of necessity. Tayshawn Holmes is a junior college transfer, played with Merriweather out of Garden City in Kansas. Avian Paya from 2 years ago, I don't know if Eagle fans will remember this, he was the backup tight end. But they put him on the defensive line, and Walt Bell and the staff, they have loved what he has brought to that unit. It is a 3-4. They call their one outside linebacker the buck linebacker, so there's potential to walk that guy up, give it the 4-3 look. From the Army game that was available, they played a compacted 3-4. They tried to take away the dive as much as they could, but it left them vulnerable to the pitch. They gave up almost 500 yards rushing that game. It was a microcosm of their season. They couldn't really tackle anybody, and it was unfortunate. But the hope is that the extra time that they've spent from a strength and conditioning standpoint, because according to reports out of Amherst, a lot of their guys are bigger. They have the number one dining commons in the country, and that's not just them saying it. That's been reported by a number of outlets, so it must be nice to say they've got the best cafeteria in the country.
Well, why didn't we go there when we were up there a couple years ago?
I didn't know.
Well, darn.
And they're investing money into the program. They put, I think, I read $53 million into their program the last few years. They've got their indoor facility. When we were up there the last time in 2017, it was a dark day, I know, but they showed us where the indoor was going to be constructed behind one of the end zones. They were working on cleaning up their outdoor practice field. From that standpoint, they've made the moves. They're getting guys bigger. They're getting guys to a place where they can compete. They're still not at 85 scholarships yet. They're only at 60. That's less than what the FCS operates at. They get 63. FBS, of course, gets 85. It's getting there. It's going to take them time. But Walt Bell has done great things wherever he has been. Remember, he spent time in the Sun Belt Conference. He was Blake Anderson's offensive assistant coach at Arkansas State for 2 years. The two guys on defense that should be making a bunch of plays are the linebackers Cole McCoubry and Mike Ruane. Incidentally, Ruane had some difficulties figuring out how to stay fit during the offseason. He took up yoga. So he starts doing downward dogs after making tackles for a loss on Saturday. We'll know why.
There you go.
Josh Wallace is a heavily recruited cornerback. He started as a freshman a year ago out of DeMatha Catholic in Hyattsville, Maryland. Noah Boykin didn't play a year ago after transferring from Notre Dame, somebody that they really like. There's potential. And the best thing for them is that they can't get any worse than they were last year. They gave up 300 yards rushing per game, 6.5 yards per carry, 53 points per game. You can't get any worse than that, and no. They know that.
Yeah, man, I guess at that point, there's only one way to go.
you have to get better. I can't imagine it being worse than that. And they went through it. They don't believe that a year ago was a reflection of who they are. They lost those 11 games by an average of 36 points. They couldn't stop anybody. They wanted to run the football, but they couldn't sustain drives, and that's a reason why they only held onto the football for about 24 minutes per game. Their defense was just on the field way too much, facing 72 plays per game. Teams decided that, okay, we can run the ball, and it didn't matter who it was. there was only one team last year that didn't rush for 200 yards against them, and that was the Akron game that they won. Can't block, can't tackle, can't win.
That's one way to look at it.
That's the only way to look at it for them.
It's a pretty simple formula there.
Look, I'm really happy that this game got under the schedule because I think UMass, as an opponent, it gives the Eagles an opportunity to fix a couple of things that maybe lagging behind on. Personally, it's a chance to catch up with one of my good friends in broadcasting, Jay Burnham, who I've known since 2008. I haven't seen him since 2010. We were talking just the other day that the last time that we saw each other was at a minor league baseball game in Lakewood, New Jersey, when I was still with the Charleston River Dogs, and he was the then voice of the AA Trenton Thunder in the Yankee system. So I was announcing for the Yankee Class A team. He was with the AA team. So he remembered quite a few of the guys that used to play in Charleston. But in 2008, when I was the assistant broadcaster for former voice of the Minutemen, Josh Maurer, Burnham was the voice of the Asheville Tourists. And Asheville, McCormick Field, is still one of my favorite ballparks. Any level, any sport, I don't care. It is absolutely gorgeous the way it is cut into the side of the mountain. Just when you get involved with what you're doing, you sometimes lose touch with people. But getting a chance to reconnect with Jay, and the fact that they're actually going to be traveling this week, he thought that they may be doing the game by monitor up in Amherst. I'm real excited they're going to get a chance to come down here, and it's another home game. We haven't had one of those in 5 weeks. So
that would be a heck of a round table to talk about either minor league baseball or just talk, for that matter, of you, Jay Burnham, and Josh Maurer.
There are stories in that table.
I'd imagine there are.
There are lots of stories.
And something tells me you couldn't constrict that to an hour.
Jay is one of the best dudes, not just from the sake of dudes, but he is a fantastic broadcaster as well. He's been in it for about 20 years, a graduate of Elon.
6 degrees.
So whenever, when I was at the Citadel, he would see the Bulldogs playing the Elon Phoenix, I'd get notice every now and then, especially if Elon won. I wouldn't hear from him if the Citadel would win. It was funny how that worked. But the fact that they can make the trip, and he's never been here before. Now, this will be nice, and for the Eagles on the field, I think that they'd like to get some more experience for the secondary. The hope is that Kendrick Duncan can return. If not, then maybe get him back for the Coastal game. And I'm sure the Eagles would love to be 3-1 going back in a conference play. They've got 12 games now. We hope. We've heard that before. And this also begins a stretch of 9 consecutive weeks where the Eagles are going to have to play a game. Now, again, up in the air. But as it stands, if things progress the way that they should, the Eagles aren't going to get any more breaks until the middle of December.
And I think one of the things that gets lost in translation here is everybody talks about how there's such a thing as too much time off in a college football season.
Sure.
Obviously, you like bye weeks, and especially in my case, I was expecting just a off week of Braves baseball and the NLDS, but now it's time for UMass. But I think, step back and look at it, and you're going into next week, back in a conference play like you mentioned against Coastal Carolina, who is heavily improved from the last couple of years. And this is a Coastal Carolina team that was in the bottom of the Sun Belt Conference a year ago, and now they're receiving votes in the top 25. And so I think you need a game so you're not 3 weeks off and then going into Coastal Carolina, because ask Arkansas State how that went a couple of weeks ago.
They started off against Coastal okay. I think they were up 14-7, but then they just drifted. They faded. You could tell they were rusty. Blake Anderson said that on the Sun Belt Media teleconference the week after. They just didn't have enough juice because they couldn't get the kind of live reps that they needed with so many guys down. So while college students, I'm sure, would love to not have to play a game for 3 weeks, let's not act like they're going to be sleeping in for 21 straight days. They're still going to be practicing. They're still going to be knocking heads. But it would have been a tough situation to come back from, because it's almost as if you're coming back from another offseason.
Yeah.
It's a training camp in the middle of the season that you didn't anticipate having to deal with. But now we focus in 4 days looking for this team to improve in whatever way conceivable. the offense, if they can look good for three straight weeks, if the defense can get off the field quickly, I mean, they did that for a majority of the ULM game outside of the last 20 minutes and 30 seconds. And then with special teams, a new wrinkle this week with Alex Rayner now handling field goals from 45 and in. The freshman Dylan Lewis, who's been doing kickoffs out of East Coweta, he's going to be handling field goals 46 and longer, taking you back to the days of the late 80s of David Cool and Mike Dallas. Terry has talked about them both fondly, how Dallas would be the close kicker, Cool would be the long-range kicker. So we'll see how that works out as well. That's definitely going to give us something to talk about going into the Coastal game next week. And by that time, hopefully Georgia Southern's 3-1.
Time to add another chapter to the crazy book of 2020 football, Georgia Southern style. But it'll be Georgia Southern and UMass, 4 o'clock the kickoff from Alan E. Paulson Stadium this weekend on Saturday afternoon. We'll be on the air at 2 o'clock with the Eagle Tailgate Show as Frank, Russ, Terry, and myself will bring you up to kickoff where Danny, Terry, and Russ will bring you the play-by-play story. Until this weekend, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.